This is Comics Catch Up. Where we read comics suggested by you, the listeners of War Rocket Ajax, that we have missed.
Oh, hey there, friend. It's been a while. Why don't we Comics Catch Up? That's right, it's Comics Catch Up. This is the show where the hosts of War Rocket Ajax, that's me, Chris Sims, and my best friend, Matt Wilson.
Hello.
We catch up on comics that we might have missed throughout the times because we forgot about them, or we were busy reading other stuff, or we just didn't catch it at the time.
That's true.
And much like the case was with the Sony PlayStation 1, for this one, you are not ready.
Red Sonja E. Is that something? Is that anything?
I tried. I don't think it's anything.
Well, anyway, we are talking about the 2013 Gail Simone run on Red Sonja. In particular, the first six issues of that run, which are a pretty solid story, six-issue story arc, relatively self-contained. I believe issue 7 continues the story nominally, like it references it at the beginning, but it is a pretty well self-contained story unto itself. This is by Gail Simone as writer, who I mentioned. Art by Walter Giovanni, who I have never seen draw any other comic, but who does a good job here.
Yeah, no, it's the book looks good.
Yeah. I'm going to say two things right up front about this story, Chris.
Okay.
One, a simple observation. It is nigh impossible for me to read a comic where people are assaulting castles and doing sword and sorcery.
Buddy, you were about to say the exact same thing I was about to say.
It's impossible for me to not compare this to Berserk, and that's not fair.
It's not fair. It's so not fair. But I literally went straight from reading Berserk to reading this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the entire time I was reading it, like, especially when Anissa started talking about her ghosts and being followed around by ghosts, especially then I was like, I mean, it ain't Berserk, though.
That's like Berserk. Hey, you know what that's like? That's like Berserk.
That's like Berserk, but I mean, it's not as good as Berserk. That's so unfair to this book.
I have decided I'm like basically going to buy a Berserk hardcover every month until I have them all.
Why don't you just buy them all right now?
Because
$700, man.
Because I want to space it out. I want it to feel like I'm not dropping a lot of money at once, and I want to sit and look and read each volume. I want to give them all time. You know what I mean? Because they deserve it. They deserve to be looked at closely, and it's nice to look at that art. Anyway, here's my second point about Red Sonja 2013 numbers 1-6, published by Dynamite Comics. This sounds like an insult in 2024, but it would sound like a compliment in 2023 when these books were coming out.
The 2013.
2013. Did I say 2023?
Yes.
Long day.
I get it.
This is the MCU movie screenplay for Red Sonja.
Yeah. No, I think that's absolutely fair. I mean, yeah, that's kind of like I was going to try and think of a different way to put it, but I think you kind of put it the perfect way, Matt.
Here's why I think that's the case. Here are the elements that I believe are in here that make it such. It starts sort of kind of in media res, where Red Sonja is already Red Sonja.
Yeah.
Right?
It is not an origin story, although we do get an origin flashback.
That's what I was about to say. There's ample opportunity here to delve into Red Sonja's origins, and it's not even just one origin. It's an origin of kind of how she grew up in some ways, but it's also an origin of like how she got to know the characters in this story specifically.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so it gives you time to learn who she is and learn about her and how she came to be who she is today. But it's not just like from the get-go, oh, here's how she was born and grew up to be Red Sonja. It's not that. The biggest Marvel Cinematic Universe part of it, though, is that the villain is her opposite number.
Yeah, the villain is someone exactly like her. Yeah.
Yes. A former friend who is also her opposite number. That is the Marvel Iron Man template to the letter.
Look, I like the MCU movies a lot. Like, generally speaking, there's a couple of real stinkers in there.
There's a couple of real stinkers in there.
Quantumania was bad, which was shocking.
The newest ones are kind of not so great. Like, I haven't seen the Marvels yet.
Marvel's just fine.
I haven't seen the Marvels yet. The Marvels is, I will watch it and I'm sure I'll enjoy it. But like, they had a couple in a row that were just like, uh-oh. Quantumania was one of them. Guardians 3 was fine. But like, Thor 4? Woof.
Thor 4 was like a C. Like a C minus, I think. The Marvels, I thought, was very fun. It was nice to get a movie that was kind of like goofy a little bit in the way that I like comics to be a little bit goofy. I haven't seen Guardians 3, but boy, oh boy, Quantumania. Woof. Bud.
I enjoyed Guardians 3. I enjoyed Black Panther 2, but it was not nearly as good as the first one. Doctor Strange 2 was the last really good one.
Yeah, I love Doctor Strange 2.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we might be unique in that, but fucking loved it.
I loved Doctor Strange 2. Eternals was bad.
Forgot they made Eternals, didn't see it.
I wanted Shang-Chi to be better.
Yeah.
Like, it's some rough stuff. But in 2013, when the Marvel... when the MCU was really hitting, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it would have been a compliment to say this book could have been the MCU script for Red Sonja. Like, if you're ever going to make a Red Sonja movie in the MCU style, this is the story.
If they made a Red Sonja movie in the MCU style, it should be based on that issue of Marvel Team-Up. Where MJ gets possessed by the spirit of Red Sonja. And it should fully just be Zendaya.
You know what? I would enjoy that. I would enjoy that.
That would be a hoot.
Make that a short film, Kevin Feige.
My least favorite thing about those Marvel movies is exactly that. That every single one of them is about somebody fighting a guy who's just like them. And
they're opposite number, and because it's what they did in Iron Man, and that worked.
Yeah,
and so I mean, look, in some cases it's much better than other cases. Like Killmonger in Black Panther is great.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, Caecilius is not.
Caecilius is not. Yeah,
I would say Yellow Jacket is among the more forgettable villains in the entire franchise, although I like that movie.
Weird what they did with him in Quantum Mania. Very weird what they did with him.
Very weird, and honestly, I would call that disrespectful.
To both Yellow Jacket and MODOK.
I would call it disrespectful to me.
Sure.
That is disrespectful to Christopher. Dog.
Fair enough. One of the worst special effects I've ever seen in an MCU movie.
Atrocious.
Yeah.
Absolutely atrocious. Yeah. Like, everything about it, unbelievably bad. Which, how do you do that with, like, the same cast and the same director?
You know?
They biffed it hard, dude.
Those first two Ant-Man movies were, like, they were superhero action movies, and they had tons of special effects, but they were, like, Earth movies. They were bound to Earth. And then Quantumania was a big Quantum Zone Microverse movie. And it was too much. It was too much to ask of Peyton Reed, clearly.
The director, Bring It On.
Bring It On set on Earth.
That's true. So is Herbie Fully Loaded, actually, now that I think of it.
So is Yes Man.
Yeah.
The thing is, yeah, sometimes it's really good, sometimes it's not. I think it succeeds in this comic. I think Anissa, as Red Sonja's foil here, I think it works for a few reasons. Top of the list, I think it works because of their shared origin, which is the first thing you see in this arc, where Red Sonja and Anissa are in captivity together. They're both these brutal warrior women who killed all their opponents in the gladiatorial arena. They were the only two survivors. And so they had a special bond because of that. But then they went their separate ways. They made different choices. Red Sonja decided to stay in the kingdom and stay with the king who liberated them, while Anissa went off to do her own thing. And Anissa became deeply haunted by all the people she killed. So now she sees those ghosts around her all the time.
Sonja doesn't stay. She does leave, but okay. She goes off and becomes Red Sonja. But she does come back. Looking for her.
Right. She has more of a loyalty to the king that saved them than Anissa does. Certainly. Yes. Yeah. And so I like that. I like that they go their separate ways. They have different experiences. And so then when they come back together, they're enemies. I also think it really works because at the end, they realize that they're not actually each other's enemies. Other people are their enemies.
Mm-hmm.
It is a little somehow the Emperor has returned when the king, the conquering king that they thought was dead, the one that imprisoned them and made them fight gladiatorial battles, is not dead. Then he's just back.
I mean, since we're talking about it, I'll go ahead and say that is the worst part of the story.
Yeah.
By far. Just because it does come kind of out of nowhere. And, like, it seems to be a conceit to not, like, give us the big fight between these two characters. But, like, I have no doubt that it was the plan going into it, but it doesn't really feel like it, because it happens so quickly at the very end.
Well, it happens so quickly. Like, it's a 6-issue arc. It happens at the end of issue 5.
Yeah.
So he can be the bad guy in the last issue, and yeah, Red Sonja and Anissa, instead of fighting each other... Which we get them fighting some, but there's not a conclusion to their fight.
Mm-hmm.
And And, you know, instead of fighting each other, they have to team up to defeat him. It's pretty sudden, yeah. And then there's also the twist in here of, okay, so there's this plague that tons of people supposedly have. And it's talked about from the beginning. It's constantly discussed that, oh, there's a plague that's been going throughout the kingdom for however many years. And at the end of the first issue, Sonya is told that she has it. Like, a dude with the plague coughs all over her on, like, page 6. So I was like, of course you have it. But that's not why she has the plague, because the plague isn't a plague. It's poison. And so somebody within the kingdom has been poisoning certain people's food that they want dead. And at the end of this, at the tail end of this story, is revealed that the good king, his son, tried to poison Red Sonja because he was jealous of Sonja, because he's not a warrior and she is. And so he thought his dad saw her as like a son more than him,
mm-hmm.
which is, I think, interesting, but also like sort of sudden. Like, it's not that it's not set up at all, but it's not as seated as it could be.
Yeah, everything is seated, and all the characters are, like, in place, and it all makes sense, but it does feel like this was supposed to be, like, 8 issues.
Like, yeah.
All of the stuff at the end happens super, super suddenly, and it has a very weird feeling of suddenness, really, of kind of not being clear about why everything is happening in the last issue. Like, the first 5 issues, I think, are really well paced. They're really enjoyable. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's Gail Simone, so it's going to be pretty good. Like, baseline, it's going to be pretty good. But that last issue really kind of like almost falls apart. It doesn't completely fall apart because it's still okay, but it is, it feels like how there's that last season of Game of Thrones where, like, maybe if they had like twice as long, a lot of that stuff would have made more sense. But instead, it just kind of like all gets crammed in there.
Well, I think in stories like this in particular, there's always a push and pull regarding how much you want to surprise your audience and how much you want to go your audience to go, oh, I saw that coming. I think there's a tendency to want to head off the response of, oh, I saw that coming. So you hold your surprises back and you kind of make them too surprising. You know what I mean? Like, again, it's unfair to compare this book to Berserk, but Berserk sets every little thing up so far in advance.
Yeah, you know what else starts in Meteor Race and then has the opportunity to give us an origin story?
Yeah, your boy.
Berserk does.
Like, Griffin is talking about how he's going to...
Griffith. Matt.
Did I say Griffin?
You said Griffin.
It's been a long day.
And I'm your youngest femto. I'm your youngest member of the God Hand.
Griffith is talking from not just his first appearance in the Golden Age, from his first appearance in the Black Swordsman arc in the flashback where he's pulling guts out of the pile of bodies that he's in. Because I just read this.
Uh-huh.
From Griffith's very first appearance as Griffith and not Femto, he is talking about how he's going to get his own kingdom.
Yes.
And that's his motivation. And you know that's what's motivating Griffith all the time from that point. And you know that somehow Griffith gets from this point to being Femto. Because also in the Black Swordsman arc, Guts calls Femto Griffith.
Yes.
It's all fucking there from the start. I also, while we're on a Berserk tangent, as I've been rereading like the early chapters of Berserk, I have gone back and watched the 1997 anime, the corresponding episodes of the anime.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bit in the very first episode of the anime that's like a very condensed version of the Black Swordsman arc, where a dude talks about King Griffith, because the people who made the anime didn't know what was going to happen.
I feel like the two issues with us and this book in particular. One, it's not Berserk. That's not fair.
Yeah, that's not fair. But
two, it like kind of fall. It's almost like there was a decision about whether Anicia was going to continue to be a character in this book that was made while number 6 was being written.
And she won't, because she dies in issue 6.
She won't.
But I do think Gail Simone, to give Gail Simone total credit, because I think Gail is a great writer, generally.
Absolutely.
I think all the twists of issue 6, Gail intended from the start. I think she intended to reveal that the plague was actually poison from the start. I think she intended for the prince to betray Sonya from the start, or to have tried to poison Sonya from the start. I think the evil king was supposed to return from the start, because I think Gail goes out of her way to not show that he died,
mm-hmm.
You know? It does just kind of sneak up on you. I do think, continuing to talk about this in kind of like the screenplay sense, I really think you can see the three-act structure of these 6 issues. Because, like, there's the first act that sets up the conflict and gives Sonya a reason to go on a different journey for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like at the end of issue 2 is when it's actually at the end of issue 2 that Anicia tells Sonya that she has the plague. And the Sonya has to surrender to her. And as a result, she's banished.
Yeah, and she doesn't just surrender because she's got the plague. She surrenders because if she doesn't, then Anicia is going to murder everybody in the whole town.
Right, yeah. So she surrenders, and then she goes off into the snowy mountains to kind of not be Red Sonja for a little while, and that's Act 2.
To have an origin flashback.
Act 2 is where she goes to the mountains. She's at her lowest point, she has an origin flashback, she remembers her father, and she goes through like a crisis of confidence, right?
Yeah.
And it's through all of that, almost dying, she has to be saved by her two bodyguards, who are also her two new sidekick characters, which is also very MCU.
Which is very MCU, as is Red Sonja being like, well, you two are great. Not going to be in the next story, though.
Yeah, yeah. She goes blind. She has to be, like, pulled by the bodyguards, like, through the wilderness to try to go get a cure. And then by the end of issue 4, she's, like, got her groove back a little bit.
It's almost like all is lost in that moment.
That's right. But then she gets her vision back in a near miraculous moment. She gets her vision back, and she like fights off a group of bandits who also look very berserk. Like, I have to say.
Yeah, because half of them are fishmen.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's another thing is, like, look, I mean, look, I've read a lot of Conan the Barbarian stories. And so I do feel like I've read more Conan than I have Red Sonja. More Conan exists than Red Sonja.
Right.
But there is no explanation for how there's just full fishmen hanging out.
It's true.
And that's fine. But I mean, you gotta, like, that's another weird thing that makes it feel very berserk.
It absolutely is, yeah. Yeah. Like, I'm sure if I'd read more Red Sonja prior to this, like, the only Red Sonja I've ever really read is Marvel kind of stuff. But I've never seen the fishmen in Red Sonja stories before.
She does say at one point, she's like, oh, dang, these are these fishmen. Like, they're addressed, they're explained as much as they need to be, which is,
The evil king's army. I'm never going to say which king's name is what, because you're never going to see them again outside of the story.
Yeah.
But the evil king's army, the army that Anicia is a part of, is mostly not human. Like, they're monsters of various types. Which, again, makes you think of Berserk. Nonetheless, at the end of issue 4 is the end of the second act, where Red Sonja's like, I'm coming, sister, do you hear? I'm coming for you, Anicia. And then 5 and 6 are the third act of the story. It's very kind of neatly structured in that way. And I'm not saying that as a bad thing. It just, that's the way it reads to me.
Yeah.
And in that sense, it's a very tidy kind of story, even with the sort of surprise stuff at the end. But ultimately, I think it just makes it solid, not great.
Yeah. I don't, like, structurally, I think it's fine. But it does absolutely, I cannot stop thinking about it now as the MCU Red Sonja book.
Yeah.
Cause that's so, like, so much of what it is, to the point of, like, the end of it is, and Red Sonja rode off to have another adventure.
She says she's going to get drunk in legendary fashion, which is also, might I say, like, quippiness is part of Gail Simone's style. And I like that about a lot of Gail Simone's stories. But there's a running gag in here about how Red Sonja just wants to get drunk. Or is drunk.
Or is drunk, yeah.
And it is not out of character for Red Sonja, but it is like the way to insert some jokes in what's largely an action story.
It is a way to insert some jokes, but I will say that did strike me as maybe being, I assumed that was intentionally kind of sad because,
you think so?
Well, because it's sad that Conan is drunk a lot, because, you know, Conan is an alcoholic and that's what will eventually kill him. Yeah. And so it was like, it definitely is played for laughs. And I actually really, really like that bit early on where Red Sonja is like telling these bandits to leave her alone. And they're like, well, if you're so fucking tough, why aren't you fighting us? And she's like, 'cause I'm drunk. And then, like, she gets up and starts kicking their asses, and they're like, you said you were drunk? And she's like, I ain't that drunk.
Yeah.
Like, that bit is really funny.
Yeah, it's good.
But, like, yeah, I read that as being a little more, not poignant. What's the word I'm thinking of? Like a little more, like
it's pathos.
Yeah, having a little more pathos.
Yeah,
to it.
I can see that. It definitely struck me as like MCU style humor injection into what is otherwise a straightforward action story.
Yeah.
With even like kind of a sad ending because again, Onisia dies at the end. But Onisia ends up becoming a character with a lot of pathos. I think Onisia is probably the strongest part of this story.
100%.
I think she's a well-developed character. I think you feel bad for her because she's just riddled with guilt over what she had to do. And it has made her into who she is. And I find that to be really a smart way to characterize a villain and relatable. Like,
yeah.
Like she, you can understand her. And I think that's the best thing about her. And I think she's the best thing about the story.
Yeah. It feels like the ending where she dies is perfectly appropriate. It is another one of those things that makes it feel like an MCU movie because, like, you know, villains die in movies because there's not going to be four of them a month about the same person, like with the same cast. So you don't need to keep the villains around, which is why all the Batman movies are always really weird. Because they kill all the villains. And it's like, really? Riddler only got the one shot? I mean, not new Riddler. New Riddler, he's got that. He's got TikTok. He'll be fine.
Yeah, he's... hey, guys.
Hey, guys. So funny. Ted Anderson 3D printed me a USB drive that is shaped like a severed thumb, like in that movie.
Funny. Funny.
Yeah, very funny. Very good.
You know what just occurred to me?
What just occurred to you, Matt?
Like I said, not all the villains in MCU movies are opposite numbers of the heroes. But there's a version of that villain in all three Iron Man movies.
Yes.
Because there's Stane in the first one.
Yeah, another rich guy in a big suit of armor.
There's Justin Hammer in the second one.
A rich guy who gets a bunch of suits of armor.
And there's Killian in the third movie.
Yeah. Who's another rich guy.
Yeah.
To be fair, that is kind of like Iron Man's deal. Like, that is kind of who Iron Man fights.
I mean, yes. But you'd think they could put Fin Fang Foom in one of those movies.
Boy, you'd think they could put Fin Fang Foom in any of those movies.
Yeah.
They tried to get the Eternals over. They could have definitely put Fin Fang Foom in one of those.
You'd think they could have got Madame Mask. They could have got Ultimo.
They could have gotten Ultimo. That's true.
I mean, Ultimo is a guy in a big suit of armor, I guess.
Yeah. Who would you put in an Iron Man movie, Matt? Besides Fin Fang Foom.
Well, they already have Crimson Dynamo, who's not an Iron Man villain. You know who they should put in a movie?
Who?
Fucking Living Laser.
That would be good. I would like that. I thought you were going to say the spores from that one issue. With the spores. That would be
fun. Get the spores?
Yeah.
But I mean, the first one I said is who I want, Fin Fang Foom.
Yeah. Unicorn? Put Unicorn in there?
Sure. Let's get Unicorn.
Yeah, man.
Iron Man's villains mostly suck. Whiplash sucks.
Damn.
They put him in a movie. But he couldn't be the main dude.
Matt Wilson coming out hard against Whiplash.
Do you disagree that Whiplash sucks?
No, I don't disagree that Whiplash sucks. Of course not.
Yeah.
like Ghost.
Ghost was in a movie. Ghost was in Ant-Man 2.
That's right. Ghost was in a movie. Yeah. They used the one other shrinky guy. And then they were like, damn, what do we do now? Who else is Ant-Man fight? Ant-Man didn't really have that many comics.
All right, Chris, it's time for us to figure out where Red Sonja 2013 numbers 1 through 6 go. I guess we should figure out what to call this story also. What's the title of this story?
Surely it was released in paperback at some point.
Yeah, that would make sense. Maybe I can go find the paperback title. Like, I think the story goes
in Queen of Plagues is what this is called.
Queen of Plagues. I think the story goes in the solidly good but not great part of the list.
Yeah, it's I do think there's a lot of good stuff here. I think the fact that we kept getting distracted and talking about other things is a
bad
sign. Yeah. But I also feel like this is a better story than we're giving it than you might think from hearing us talk about it. There's a lot of really, like, really good, solid stuff in here. I really like the art. I don't know Walter Giovanni at all, but the art is actually really, really solid.
The interior art is good, and the cover art is really good too. I think Jenny Frisson does a cover for every issue,
mm-hmm.
and Jenny Frisson is amazing, and does incredible work. But then there's, like, you know, multiple covers for each issue.
It's a dynamite book.
Almost all women. And they're all really good. Like, I know Ming did one.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Fiona Ming Staples. Doyle, yeah, Ming Doyle. There's a Fiona Staples cover. There's a Colleen Doran cover. I can't list off all the people who did covers. Nicola Scott did one. But mm-hmm. The covers are all truly beautiful.
Yeah, the covers look great.
Yeah. And the interior art is really good too. And yes, it's a very solid story. It's very good. I think it sadly suffers by comparison.
It does.
Yeah.
It's not its fault.
Yeah.
It came to us at a bad time.
Well, it's not just to Berserk. It's to other things too. But it is a perfectly solid, perfectly good story on its own. And I think it's a great start to a series. Like, that Gail Simone series lasted like 18 issues or so, with some specials, maybe 20.
Yeah. And I will say, like, my biggest knock against it, other than, like, the weird structure of that last issue, is that I want Red Sonja's two sidekicks, who are, like, genuinely pretty funny.
Yeah,
who keep calling her, like, different honorifics throughout the story, which is actually, it is a gag that happens all the time, but doesn't feel overused. It's like two or three times in every issue, and it still is actually funny by the end of the story, which is an incredible feat, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
well crafted. It's,
yeah.
There's no denying that for me.
Yeah. But
like I said, it's just suffering by comparison.
Yeah. It's just not as good as the Golden Age arc of Berserk.
Or any of Berserk. Any of Berserk, if we're being real.
Yeah.
All right.
It might be better than that story where Guts kills a bunch of kids that I was reading on a plane.
Oh. Yeah, it's better than the wild part of the Golden Age. Don't love the wild part. Okay. I'm starting with number 900.
Tony Hawknett.
Buddy, you know it. Now, this is knowing that there are 1,521 stories on the list. 900 is below halfway, but it's still in the good section of the list because it's a top-heavy list.
Number 900 is X-Men Omega Red.
Yeah.
From Adjectiveless X-Men, numbers 4 through 7. Which is a story that I have at various times in my life loved and hated. And I'm kind of like here right now in March of 2024, I'm coming down on the side of it rules, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, like that's a good story. That's good company to be in.
Yeah. 950 is Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. number 3, which is the story called Dark Moon Rise, Hellhound Kill.
I would say this is better than that, although it does not have as good a title. But what does?
All right. Is this better than The Giant Turtle Man from Jimmy Olsen number 53?
Yes.
Is it better than the final issue of The Walking Dead?
Buddy, the final issue of The Walking Dead is a fucking hoot.
It is such a strange issue of comics.
It is maybe the biggest flex of all time in comics. Because it's not even really like, it's not even kind of like a fuck you. It's just a fucking flex.
It is a surprise final issue that says, this is what we're doing.
Yeah, it's a surprise final issue that no one, including retailers, knew was going to be the last issue. That's a fucking courtroom drama.
7 issues before number 200.
Incredible. Not the best comic I've ever read. Possibly the biggest flex in comics history.
Agreed. I think, okay, does that mean it deserves to go above this Red Sonja story?
I will remember that Walking Dead issue until the day I die.
Same. 100% same.
I do not know if I will remember this Red Sonja story in as vivid detail.
Fair. How about Underworld Unleashed?
It's probably exactly as good as Underworld Unleashed.
Above or below?
I think it's better. Because I think that Walter Giovanni actually does a better job with this than Howard Porter did with that. Like, I think as far as script goes, just in Underworld Unleashed, Mark Waid and Gail Simone in this book, very much on par. Like, you know, to the compliments of both of them.
Sure.
But I do think that the art is really, really solid.
All right. So the new number 936 on the Every Story Ever list is Red Sonja, Queen of Plagues, which I put in parentheses, Gail Simone, 2013, 1 through 6. And that's going to wrap us up. We ranked it. Now, I'm sure all of you listening are thinking, what are you guys going to talk about next time? Well, we have to read a story by Akira Toriyama.
Yes. The late and great Akira Toriyama. Because if there's anybody who didn't get a fair shake on every story ever in Comics Catch Up, it's Akira Toriyama.
We read, the only thing we've done for Catch Up is the first Dragon Ball story, which is clearly not predictive of how the rest of Dragon Ball would be.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't want to say he didn't get a fair shake. I think we were very fair to that comic, but it was in the time between then and now, having read all of Dragon Ball, I don't think that first story is, it's not indicative of the series at large.
So what we're going to do, I think here's how we're going to do it. Chris, just pick a story and tell me what to read.
Okay. In that case.
Okay.
I already know what I want to read. Which
all right, let's not reveal it yet.
You don't want to reveal it?
Let's not reveal it yet.
What
let's
if people want to read along with us, Matt?
Okay, fine. I wanted to surprise them, but that's true. If people want to read along with us, we'll give it to them.
I think we should read The Tournament of Power, which is where the strongest 10 people from all 14 universes have to have a Royal Rumble to determine which universes will live and which will die. And it kind of fucking owns.
Okay. So we're going to read the Tournament of Power arc from Dragon Ball on the April episode of Every Story or of Comics Catch Up. So come back for that. If you want to recommend something for us to read on a future Comics Catch Up, you can email us at warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. We're also on Tumblr, warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. You can hit us up on Blue Sky. We're warrocketajax.bsky.social, or join our Discord. You have to be invited to be a member of our Discord, but if you ask us for an invitation, politely, we'll provide you one over there to join. It is a pretty cool community of folks over there. If you want to help out this show, help us continue to make it. These monthly Comics Catch-Up specials, our monthly Every Story Ever specials, our weekly War Rocket Ajax show, Movie Fighters, and the new Snack Situation, which you'll be hearing very soon. You can head over to patreon.com/warrocketajax and kick in whatever amount you like, as little as a dollar per month, to support this show and all those other shows I just talked about. And you get rewards for being a Patreon member, so go help us out there. If you want to find me and my stuff, go to mattdwilson.net to find links to everything. Chris, where can people find you?
Everybody can find all of my stuff by going to the-isb.com, but it's mostly going to be right here on the Clytus Media family of podcasts.
Bye, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, be here next time when we talk about Akira Toriyama and Dragon Ball and read some good stuff. But until then, hey, good catching up.